I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smashpot. For 2,000 years, the sacred art of the ninja has been guarded in the East.
Remember the day I found you.
Now, it has come to the West.
Remember what is hidden deep in your mind.
He is the only soldier.
Date of birth unknown.
The only American.
Who is he?
Who is capable of defeating the secret Black Star Army. The final hour. The deadliest art of the Orient is now in the hands of an American. American Ninja.
Hello and welcome to Smash Pod 3, the podcast that relights the fire of 80s action movies and celebrates the decade where the explosion was king. It was, wasn't it?
It was.
And this week we'll be talking about a humble US Army private with legendary skills of deadly stealth as he takes on the fearsome Black Ninja and tries to conquer basic acting skills. Yes, it's American Ninja. And joining me to accidentally hit ourselves in the groin with a pair of nunchucks is screenwriter and the creator of the massively successful and beloved Death in Paradise, Robert Thorogood.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. And you can be found on Twitter as at Rob Thor.
Yes, indeed.
Should anyone wish to locate you?
That's fine. I'm not on there very much at the moment because we're in the middle of shooting the new series, so I'm busy and tired. But I'm delighted to stop doing that to come and talk about... I mean, I'm really pleased that in a week that I've had to work so very, very hard with production baying for scripts that I've had to take an hour and a half off to watch American Ninja.
I'm pleased for you.
I mean, it took a lot longer than an hour and a half, it has to be said.
Because you may send hatred this way, but it is a project film stroke thing that you picked.
It is because my memory was wrong. So my memory said, so back in the 1980s when this came out, I was about 13, 14, I think, when I saw it. And I used to go to a boarding school and my mum would put me on a coach for 2.5 hours to get to the boarding school, because why would you have a boarding school near where you lived? And on the coach, they'd play a film. And I have fevered memories of Escape from New York, obviously, being one of them, which I never want to revisit because my memory could never match the reality of what that film was about and Snake Plissken and all of that. But I presume you're doing it in this run?
I'm going to try to. Also, you were escaping from the real world to enter a dystopia.
yes. A double dystopia.
Double dystopia.
But the other one that I remember seeing in particular was American Ninja. And not only did I see it then and think it was definitely better than The Karate Kid,
right,
which is an opinion that we might want to revisit.
Yes.
I lived in a small village in Suffolk, and if you walked down to the garage, you could get out The Cotton Club on VHS or American Ninja. You know, when it was still, clarinet case-sized VHS boxes. So I'd watch it a few times. And so when I saw that Smash Pod 3 was about 80s films, I thought, well, I know the one that's terrific. Better than Karate Kid, as good as you can get, American Ninja.
And how do you feel now?
I feel dirty. No, I feel that I've wasted a lot of time No, it was, if I was being positive, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And some of it was even quite good. But the bad bits were very bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tiring. It was quite tiring. There were some fights which, particularly that first, when the convoy goes off. I'll tell you what bogged me down a lot was I couldn't work out what the Americans were doing on this island anyway, who the rebels were, what they were transporting. I mean, eventually it becomes apparent. Mm. But when you're watching it through, not the first time, but for the first time in 20-something years, you don't really know what's going on and why anything happens.
No, it's one of those films that you had as a child where you didn't understand the plot, but it didn't really matter to you.
Because you've got that central powerhouse performance of Michael.
Exactly. I mean, this film's an hour and 26 minutes long, I think.
I think it's 27. That extra minute hurt.
It feels like 3 hours.
Because I had it up. You know, when you get the QuickTime player and it can show you the timestamp.
Yeah.
And I'd be working through. I'd do about 10, 15 minutes a night. It was like homework.
Yeah. I put this on last night at 8 o'clock thinking, well, I can get this done and have an early night.
Yeah, exactly, half nine,
and
straight to bed.
And I just kept pausing it and going and doing some other things. And it took me till about midnight to finish it.
Yeah, how does it rate? Because obviously you've seen a lot of bad films.
Yeah.
Amongst them, because I found it refreshingly, sometimes interestingly, quirkily bad. But did you find it boringly bad?
No. I think it falls flat in the middle. It's not exciting, but it's not awful.
No.
It's not like the action scenes aren't exciting, are they?
It's like the A-Team.
Yeah.
It's what I felt like. And they've even got the A-Team music or Chips.
God, the
quite
music
often
in this
the synthesizers in it. You're sort of going, "Oh, it's an episode of Chips."
There's a point in this film with the guy doing the music. I forget who his name was. I didn't write it down.
No, I didn't write
but
it.
But he obviously thinks this trumpet sound on my keyboard sounds
bloody
brilliant, doesn't it? I'm going to go to the highest possible reach of this sound and I'm going to use it. And I'm going to even do the waggle stick so it goes
But I found the trumpet better sometimes than the action sequence that it was accompanying, it has to be said.
I'd say that's very fair. But yeah, Michael Dudikoff.
Michael Dudikoff, who in my memory was brilliant and in reality was not. I read online, because obviously I've done rigorous research to go with this. They chose the actor after they had to do physical tests for stunts and karate. So they wouldn't choose anyone who could act until they had first proven that they could do the action. And it is noticeable that maybe the better way to choose actors is on their acting first and then sort out the...
With
the
stuntman, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but Menahem Golan, because this is a canon film...
It is, yes.
He loved Michael Dudikoff.
Well, he's wrong, isn't he?
He is wrong, because he had three actors he loved, possibly because they were cheap and said yes to things.
Mm.
Charles Bronson.
Okay.
Chuck Norris, who he wanted to make the biggest star in the world.
Well...
And Michael Dudikoff. And he even had Michael Dudikoff slated to play Spider-Man in the canon version of Spider-Man.
Well, if you covered his face, it might be better.
You know, there's a few moments in this film where he's jumping around, leaping up and down buildings.
Yes.
He's quite Spider-Man-ish, so I can see how he's thought of him.
Yeah, and he looks nice and he walks well.
He's muscular.
He really is at a time. Not as muscular as Jackson, though.
Oh.
Dear heavens, he's good. And he's really good in it.
He is good. He's actually good. Comes out of this film and you think, that guy can actually act.
And very sadly, I looked him up on IMDb. Steve James died very soon afterwards. One of his pallbearers, Michael Dudikoff.
Yeah.
Very sad. I mean, it is sad, so I shouldn't joke about it. It was sad. He died of pancreatic cancer like in his early 50s. Only a few years after this, and he looks the greatest example of a human being I've ever seen. When he takes this, I mean, there's quite a lot of homoerotic, overtones to this film, aren't there?
Yeah, to the point where the music doesn't help at all.
No,
when they're rolling around on the grass and the music's kind of going...
No. There's a really good bit. One of the very first time you meet Jackson, this wonderful, black, muscular leader of men in the army, he's just come in off some kind of a run with all of his sweaty men and he says... I know morale's low, lads. Let's hit the showers. And you're going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, men. I know our morale is low, so now let's just go hit the showers, okay?
Well,
like that, is it?
And you wonder...
It does get lonely in the face.
Well, was that knowingly written?
I think it was meant to be a kind of macho thing, like, hey, forget about it, guys. Let's have a shower, and then afterwards we can look at pictures of ladies.
It's not how it plays, though, is it?
It doesn't play like that at all, no.
No.
It's like, let's go and have some sex in the shower.
But that's, you know, so that's why, even though it was quite lackluster, I still enjoyed bits of it, because inadvertently, it wasn't witty, but it was quite funny.
Well, they've made the smart decision of putting Jackson in this, because if it was just Dudikoff,
oh, jeepers
creepers, he would flounder. shall we call it, under the weight of the role, I think.
Yes. Poor, I mean, I feel sorry for him. He's serviceable. I wouldn't want to be too rude, you know. He was better at The American Ninja than I would have been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same here. You know. I mean, a different film if it was me or you. Yeah. For a start, we're not American.
Exactly, and more dressing gowns and slippers, I think.
The dressing gown and slippers ninja.
Exactly, exactly.
Also, this is the point of Menahem Golan's life where he was obsessed with ninjas.
Well,
Cannon made a lot of films about ninjas.
Not the good ones, though.
No.
Quite often the bad ninjas.
Yeah.
These are not... And even when you look at the various shapes of the ninjas, you're going, I think they've just got in some gaffers and a few people who've moved some lights to put on some black costumes.
I mean, these are unique ninjas because there are all sorts of different kind of ninjas, it turns out. You know, there's proper ninjas, there's hard ninjas, there's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But of course.
These are shit ninjas.
Yeah, they are shit ninjas.
Who aren't very good at being ninjas.
And they're slow ninjas.
Very slow.
And quite noisy.
Mm.
And they choose lots of methods of dispatch that aren't, for example, the most useful one.
No.
So they'll always go for a good bow and arrow or some kind of nunchuck or something and just ignore the guns lying around. They won't fire weaponry.
They will run at you going, while holding a sword aloft.
Exactly, exactly.
Allowing you to stab them in the stomach.
And and all of the sword fights, we ought to start on the movie, but one of the things that really tickled me is that most of the sword fights involved people wiping swords against each other because they couldn't even be bothered to come up with decent slashing or blood effects. So Michael Dudikoff just wipes his sword against someone who then sort of falls down quite camply.
Well, I noticed this in a lot of martial arts films from this period, that the way they dispatch people... I've probably said that word too much, but never mind.
Yeah.
Is that they'll sort of let them run past them and then swipe their back.
Yes. Yes.
Like they're kind
wipe.
Of,
I don't think it's swipe. It's just wiping.
It's a wipe. It's like their oyster cards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the sword's got a bit of damp on it and they're just trying to just clean it off.
But the person will react by flinging arms up in the air and going, ah! And
that's right. There are some... There is... I sort of found myself wondering who had the most ludicrous death. And actually, it comes right at the end when the baddie's getting on the helicopter. And Victor, this is a bit of a spoiler, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah.
Is it Victor, the French guy, who's not French?
Ortega. It is Victor Ortega.
Victor Ortega shoots them both. And they both sort of jump up in the air like marionettes and then collapse to the floor like they're in The Sound of Music when they do the little marionette show with the high in the hill is the lowly goat herd.
To be fair, he was using explosive bullets.
Oh, was he?
I don't know. Well, I'm trying to help him out.
Well, I don't think that's how humans explode, is it?
I've not been in conflict.
It's very good. I found myself wanting to screen grab all the way through and bring it in and just show it to you and then titter. Because there are so many moments. Anyway, why don't we start talking about Hacky Sack? Because that was quite a popular craze back in the 80s.
Well, I was going to say, we are in the Philippines.
Are we?
No, we're not.
The thing is, I got really... as somebody who writes a show that's set abroad, that's in a sort of fictional place, right, one thing I got obsessed with was It's Never Sunny. I mean, it is a few times later on, but they're clearly shooting in the off-season, like we do with Death in Paradise, because it's cheaper. You can't afford to go out when it's really, really expensive and sunny. But secondly, there is no specificity over what this American base is, where it is. We're going to meet rebels later on who are shipping merchandise, and that's not explained for a long old time.
But they're rebel ninjas as well, which is not really
well
clear.
I thought the rebels had outsourced the security to a ninja firm.
Right.
But
not like Group Foie.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like Foie.
Yeah.
Oh, the voice comes. Good, good. Because this is a film with dangerous voice impressions from you, John. I noticed.
I'm not
going
to go
later.
Near.
Okay.
I'm not. No.
But I couldn't work out, because also the signage is all Filipino. But what are the Americans doing here? What do you think the American bases, who are the rebels? Because it's the time of Marcos, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The early 80s.
Yeah.
Who are the rebels?
Unclear.
And what are the Americans funded rebels against Marcos? I mean, I got taught geography by Trevor Huggins, so he didn't really do the sort of Iran-Contra sort of that sort of world of the right wing groups that the Americans funded in the '80s. But I thought it was never clear whether the screenwriter or the producer had ever sat down and gone. So the Americans are in the Philippines with a base in control of this territory where there are rebels, in inverted commas, who have got huge plantations of something.
I'm guessing what's happened is that the script probably originally said they were based in China or Japan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it was cheaper to shoot in the Philippines,
exactly.
So they changed it.
Yes, because it would make sense with all of these Japanese ninjas if it had been in Japan.
Yeah, that would make perfect sense.
Yeah. But you don't want to spoil a good story just because you can't get the location, eh?
No, exactly.
Oh, okay, so the American base is in the Philippines.
In the Philippines. That's right. Okay, and fine. We're going to not walk, you know, it's like, you know, the tiger in Africa.
A tiger in Africa? Hmm? A tiger in Africa?
Well, it's probably escaped from a zoo.
Doesn't sound very likely to me.
So.
Oh, right, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. And we meet Joe Armstrong.
Yep.
And he's watching on with disdain while doing his own butterfly knife tricks.
But his butterfly knife was quite good. Oh, yeah, but they were. I mean, the coolest guy in school was always the guy with the butterfly comb.
Yeah.
If you remember the guy who went on the day trip to Fakon and came back with bangers and a butterfly comb.
Yeah.
You know, and Hollywood chewing gum.
Bangers, of course, is an 80s term for pornography.
Yeah, exactly.
You're quite right. I forgot about the butterfly comb.
And what's brilliant, and this sets him up so well, he will not speak.
No. And that's a good choice by the director.
This is a good choice by the director. And he just stands there and he watches in. Well, you'd say disdain, but he watches maybe like he's about to do a fart or something, slightly puzzled, as the cool kids do hacky sack.
Yeah.
How about some help? Get help.
What's his problem?
I don't know. It's a new guy. He just got here yesterday. Excuse me. Yeah. Throw me the bag. Then you can go back to sleep, okay?
Come on, hurry up. Also, he looks like an Athena poster.
Yes.
I think that's the thinking, is that if we have him leaning against the army truck, looking at a knife, we can take a picture of that and put a caption saying something.
Maybe
like,
put a papoose on his front with a baby
with
in
a
it.
Baby.
Yeah, because that was sort of 80s, sort of hunky but still maternal.
Military, but still caring after children.
Yeah. And
he's not going to burn your village.
No. You do feel that they put him there because they'd already worked out he couldn't act.
This is it. Because if you recall, he doesn't actually have a line of dialogue for about 15 minutes.
Well, he doesn't really speak properly for about half an hour. He has one sort of grunty line.
And you find out why very quickly.
And I did actually note this down, because you're watching the film. I'm trying to remember what his first line is. God, it really...
He said something like, are you okay?
Is that what the line is? But what's fabulous when... There we are. You're absolutely right. You've had half an hour of this brooding presence. And he goes, are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
The clothes are just a little bit wet, thank you.
Yeah, well, we can hang them out to dry.
Are you serious?
And all of his lines
you
for
see,
the rest of
it. If this was a Bond film, if this was a Bond film, they'd have dubbed him. They did that a lot.
Yeah.
And you've got someone like, are you okay? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
They left it in. Yeah, but he's watching them play hacky sack, and the guy playing hacky sack who comes out, he's like the colonel's driver.
Yeah, Charlie, the colonel's driver.
And he's like, hey, guys, I want to play hacky sack. Hang on, guys.
Yeah, in fact, he says, hang on, I'll teach you girls how to play.
Yeah, see.
And, you know, there's characterisation straight from the off. It's totes bands.
Mm.
And he looked really reminiscent of lots of actors I'd seen in 80s films. And I looked him up, the guy playing Charlie, the driver.
Yeah.
Never did anything else, really.
It's a shame. So we were robbed of that.
I know. So it's obviously a look, a sort of slightly dweeby, irritating sort of sidekick. Character.
He looks a bit like a rapist as well. He looks like one of the blokes in The Accused.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. I was so taken in by his driving skills and his ability.
Well, I think you're supposed to not like him at the beginning, aren't you?
Yes, but he comes good by the end, doesn't he?
Certainly.
And his driving skills certainly improve throughout the movie.
Good God, do they? but he goes and plays hacky sack, and wouldn't you know, he accidentally kicks the hacky sack right by Joe's head.
Yeah. And he has the temerity not to move.
And he's like, hey, throw it back, will you?
Yeah.
And he doesn't answer because the director's decided he probably shouldn't speak.
Yeah, and says, you know, loners don't go too far in this outfit. And you just go, okay, right, so I get it. He's not going to speak. Also, you're wondering, what is he doing? I mean, they are on an army base. You can't just loiter like that, can you?
No, but expositionally speaking, as a writer, as you are, it's not too bad a job, is it, to establish that this guy
is a new
recruit.
And it's pre-credit, so here we go. He's on his own. He's not one of the hacky sack gang. He's not one of the cool kids. I just love the idea of going, what really makes the American army look cool? It's when they play hacky sack. And then they meet Patricia, the lovely Patricia.
She's not a very good actress.
No one is in this. I thought of a bad bunch. She was not the best, but she wasn't the worst.
Oh, no, she's not the worst.
She's not
You got
the
Jackson
worst.
At the very peak.
Oh, Jackson's actually terrific. Yeah,
and then down the bottom, who's probably the worst, you think?
Mr. Ninja?
What, now, the eponymous American Ninja?
No. I would place him just above the Adamant.
The Black Star Ninja.
The Black Star Ninja, the one who's dressed as Adamant.
Yes.
I think he was the worst.
Yeah.
Or Ronaldo, the sergeant, or the colonel, in fact, is a very bad actor.
Yeah, he's pretty bad.
He sort of has a Philip Seymour Hoffman look to him, and post-death, I could imagine. He's the worst. Maybe the colonel's the worst. I mean, it's a crowded field.
He has a good shouty bit later that works quite well.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think Ronaldo, as he's called, is probably the worst.
Yeah.
And Black Star Ninja.
Maybe.
And some of the grunts and the hauler are like,
yeah, but that's,
you think you were.
Yeah, but they're, you know, they're day actors. That's fine.
Four corpses made you look a hero. Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, they're going on a manoeuvre.
Yes.
Of what we don't know.
Well, is it a manoeuvre? Because again, I found myself wondering, they had to take Patricia somewhere, but yeah, a load of lorries of boxers too.
And she's the colonel's daughter. I can't remember if we
That's right. That. Beg your pardon. It's the colonel's daughter who means more to him than anything else. So I'm going to send her through rebel territory with no tanks or proper support, but just with some lorries with boxers in, unspecified boxers, and going where we don't know, to their home, to somewhere else?
It's unspecified.
Yeah.
Maybe it's classified.
It could be, couldn't it?
It is military. Maybe they're going to get the Roswell alien.
Yes.
To probe him anally.
Well, it would have improved it.
Yeah.
It would have improved it. But she's trouble. She's a spoilt kid in the Philippines.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, sorry to misgender the Roswell alien. It could be a she.
Of course.
I'm sorry.
That still doesn't...
Never established.
You know, yes.
Classified.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's very spoilt. She's very much like your... daughter trope from 80s films.
Yes, but there's quite a lot of tropes in 80s films, although, interestingly, later on, they steal from Top Gun, where you have the big red bike and the bloke going out and having the romantic evening. And then I discovered Top Gun was the year after. Top Gun stole from American Ninja.
Oh, my Lord.
So the hero on the big, muscular red bike with the winsome girl sitting on the back with her hair a-flowing behind... Straight out of American Ninja. Nicked.
Good God.
Stolen. Tony Scott.
Tony Scott. I hope you rot in hell.
Exactly. I think I found myself really troubled by how much the romantic...
Do you think that's why he took his own life? Because he couldn't take the guilt of stealing...
It must have been.
I'm sorry, I couldn't
say
that.
Yes, yes. I wondered, in fact, whether the Top Gun script had been around for a while and somebody from the American Ninja team had read it and gone, we need an interlude, a very boring interlude of romance. And I think a red bike's going to work in the future, so let's use that.
Yeah.
But on this instance, we don't know about the romance. In fact... I say romance. It's not even romance, is it? Instead, the
it's romancing the stone, actually. Because they do as well.
And I checked that as well. And that is before. So that is properly stolen in the timeline of 80s films.
But what happens is that the truck convoy with Patricia in it gets ambushed by rebels?
Rebels. But I also liked as they pull up to what is clearly going to be the ambush spot, there's a big sign that says, danger, heavy, equip. And then the art department have run out of space. They've just put a T on. So it goes, danger, heavy equipped.
Yeah.
And they go, that's good enough.
Yeah.
You get the gist.
It's so dangerous, the M and E and N fell off.
That's right.
The precipice.
Yeah, 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 exactly. No men around here. But yes, then there are unspecified rebels on diggers and things, just digging up the road.
Kind of like the village people.
Very village people. Yeah. Also, I sort of thought Playmobil. I sort of imagined
Playmobil's better.
You know, those big yellow diggers and those big sort of red and white boards sort of blocking off the road.
The dozers from Fraggle Rock.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
And their plan is to take the uniforms of all the soldiers.
Is it?
Well, they say strip or something like that, and they start taking off their clothes. It's either that or they're going to molest them.
Well, we learn later on that maybe there's some form of transfer of material from the Americans to the rebels. I don't
want
to spoil it.
They want what's in the trucks. Yeah, we know
that. They want what's in the trucks. Well, there are two times you see inside a chest. One of them, it contains a mattress that somebody falls on. So I'm thinking they're mattress smugglers. Mm. But a bit later on, we learn that it is actually military equipment. It is. We're in the world of arms dealing, aren't we?
Maybe they're going to steal their organs as well.
Yeah, very possibly. Yeah. But you're right, it is unspecified where they're going, why they've been stopped, why they want to take their clothes off, and why they want to steal their lorries, or what's in the lorries. So you're being asked to suspend a lot of disbelief at this point.
But what we do know
for
sure is that everyone's going along with it because the rebels are armoured.
Yeah.
Armed.
And God forbid that an American soldier should have a weapon.
Exactly.
Or, shoot back or anything.
But your Joe Armstrong,
yeah,
the eponymous American Ninja,
yeah,
he sees that they're being horrible to Patricia.
Yeah.
And they put Charlie's head through a plate glass window.
That's right. So Charlie goes through the window and no one bats an eyelid.
No.
But someone slaps Patricia.
Yeah.
And Michael, Joe Armstrong. Yes, I hadn't twigged. It is Armstrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
I actually, yeah, God.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, because later on, spoiler alert,
yeah.
the Japanese chap who raised Joe from birth.
Mr. Miyagi,
we'll call him.
Yeah.
For
clarity, because no one will have seen this bloody film.
No.
The Mr. Miyagi stand-in.
Mr. Miyagi, yeah, stand-in. He raised him for birth, and he said he chose the name Joe because it's the only American name we know.
It was actually quite a nice moment.
I was about to say he might have said Armstrong because of the moon landings, but we later on find out that he didn't know the war was over.
Well,
when
I thought
found.
Stretch Armstrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and when I was trying to keep the characters in my head clear, I struggled because there was also Joe Jackson knocking around in my head. So you've got Jackson, whose first name turns out to be, I think, Curtis or something.
Come on, Jackson's got to be named after Michael, hasn't it?
Is that how it goes? You're a black character.
We Golan and Globus might be like, oh, American things. Yeah, put American things in here. Jackson, Armstrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, he jumps in.
Yeah.
And he starts kicking some out. Well, he doesn't really. He slaps people and pushes them about.
He does. And then he hides.
Yeah.
And then he hides. But also, the only soldier, and this is going to play into the plot in a minute, the only soldier who acts like a soldier, who when attacked, fights back.
Yeah.
Everyone else just immediately gives up. He goes on the attack. Patricia gets back in the car, drives off, and then there's a telegraph pole sort of laying about 30-degree angle, and she drives up it and the car flips.
Yeah. And all the soldiers get killed because ninjas... This is where an 8-year-old's taken over the script.
Yeah.
And then ninjas come out and they fight everyone.
Well, it's not... What I found very enjoyable was that the Adamant Ninja, who I began to think of as Mr. Ninja...
Should we call him Mr.?
Mr. Ninja. So yeah. Mr. Ninja steps up with his little makeup on, and you're sort of going... Oh, that's quite funny. And in the background of the shot, two other ninjas slide down palm trees. And you go, well, I know how palm trees are constructed. That's going to hurt your bits, isn't it? Because you're going to be going foot,
ninjas,
all the way down.
Ninjas are trained to react to pain. You've seen that video of that man being kicked in the bollocks.
Of course I have. You're absolutely right.
I know they're monks, but it's the same sort of thing.
And then a few more ninjas appear, and they are quite lackluster. And then it turns out there's a flatbed lorry with trampettes on them. And they jump onto the flatbed lorry, do somersaults, and then very slowly move with swords amongst the soldiers who still haven't reached for any kind of guns or anything or tried to fight back and wipe their swords on them. And the soldiers get tired and fall over.
Also, our American ninja, before he runs off, we should say, he jumps on the floor for no reason, really. He does this a lot.
Oh, yes.
He springs forwards onto the floor for no reason.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And then just as he does that, he knocks open a box on the truck. And starts throwing...
Well, whatever he can find.
He throws like a... Well, first he throws a knife. Fine.
Is it a knife? I did think...
A screwdriver.
Yes, he throws a screwdriver first of all.
Guy gets a screwdriver in the chest or something. And the next guy, he throws like a spanner or something.
Yeah, it's like a crowbar, so like a cruciform spanner for doing different size nuts. That's quite a good weapon.
Yeah, he throws that. And then the next guy, he just throws like a stick.
Furry dice. You know, just, what
one
have we got?
Those air
packed
freshers.
Lunch. Yeah, exactly. Just flapping at him.
And he strangles him with it.
Yeah. It is really strange. It's just he opens, pops open the box and just starts chucking things. But he's, you know.
Polo mints.
I think a ninja would.
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't mind that so much.
Well, he's combined with a ninja and also the training of the army, which tells
That's
you to make
right.
do with what you find, like MacGyver.
Yes, exactly.
So he's double dangerous.
Or half as dangerous.
Anyway, he runs off and rescues Patricia.
Yes.
And what we also find out is when Patricia gets slapped, Ronaldo says, no, don't. He says something like, leave the woman alone, as if
That's
to say,
right.
I'm in on this.
Yes, I've completely blanked Ronaldo's existence from this scene altogether.
Quite rightly.
He's a
bystander in this, but he does drop his mask and say, she's not supposed to be killed.
Right.
As if to say, I'm in on this.
I should have picked up on that nuanced moment of plotting.
Acting, in fact.
Instead, what we get is a brief bit of romancing the stone, don't we?
He rips off her heels of her stilettos and she says, hey, they're Italian and expensive.
I know, it's literally the
That's
same.
That's literally what she said.
Yeah, and then puts the knife through her skirt.
Like a serial killer would.
Yeah.
She's wearing a skirt, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not good enough for him. He wants to slice it in half and turn it into trousers.
Yeah.
That is
or culottes, maybe, or something.
That is literally an assault by the patriarchy.
It is, also by a knife. I mean, it's not a good look. But in his defence, he still hasn't spoken. There's no communication.
No.
She's carping because she, despite being attacked by ninjas. What I love in this movie is that every time ninjas appear, no one goes, what? Ninjas?
Yeah.
Everyone just takes it on the chin. Oh, yeah. Ninjas are here again. Mm-hmm. Everyone run. And then the and they are bad ninjas. Yeah. You'd have thought ninjas...
Not as in tough.
No. In the old-fashioned meaning of the word bad. They sort of, like a barrel of potatoes, just sort of smash through the forest looking for Patricia and Joe, who jump in a river and hold their breath. And the ninjas can't... They look at the river and wonder, well, where are they? And turn around and go home.
Well, this scene also felt like it was choreographed by the serial killer Ted Bundy.
Right.
Because he slices her skirt open with a big knife, mm-hmm. his butterfly knife.
Right.
And then he grabs her by the mouth.
Does he?
And holds his hand over her mouth, almost
her
nose.
Oh, yeah, that's right,
well,
he does.
And crouches down into the bushes of her so they're not seen. Mm. And she says to him, "Are you trying to kill me?"
Mm.
Now, that's not something you'd say to someone who's rescuing you.
No, it felt very much to me like the screenwriter had sort of got an idea of what a chase was, but on the day, someone with personal issues got involved in the choreography.
Yes.
Maybe Michael himself.
Possibly.
I don't know. I'm sure he's a nice person.
I am pretty sure, having watched this, that it's been choreographed by a middle-aged white man.
Mm.
Because the karate's terrible.
Yes.
The action's terrible.
Yes. There's a great deal of misogyny running through it. Poor Patricia doesn't get a look in, really.
She doesn't.
She gets thrown off a roof at the end.
Wouldn't it be fun if she was like a secret martial arts person so they could have like a dual thing going on at the end?
That would make sense, wouldn't it? Because she's been out in the Far East as well. She's got moves.
Yeah, she must have.
Yeah.
But no, she's just completely...
Yeah, well, she mostly complains now after he's saved her life. Everyone else is dead, killed by ninjas, and they're in the river. And then you sort of do a strange cut to later on, they're out of the river, and she's complaining that she's lost her comb or something.
Well, she says, "Have you got a comb?
Have you got a comb?" And he goes, "I've just rescued you from a load of... we know that they're not good ninjas, but you don't, because you're only Patricia."
It's a weird scene. It's one of those weird canon scenes you used to get in canon films where their system of culture mixes with our culture.
Right, yes.
And it comes off as odd. It's like that film they did called The Last American Virgin.
Right, which I have not seen.
The woman has to have an abortion in it's a very terrifying, horrible scene. And when the man comes to see her in the hospital, he brings her a Christmas tree and some oranges, which is an Israeli tradition, which in America they don't have.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's a weird moment. And in this, she is behind a bush in the nude.
Well, is she? Because I thought it was such a lame film, she was probably wearing underwear.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And actually, the money shot is his body.
Yeah.
Because she's ogling him. I mean, that was quite...
Yeah.
That was quite... And he does look terrific.
Oh, he does. This is when he opens his mouth, by the way, and says,
"Are you okay?"
Yeah. But she's ogling his six-pack.
Yeah. And he does have one, which for the 80s is impressive. And not as good as Steve James's six-pack, but he does have one.
No. And he is uncomfortable by her ogling him. This is the first part of where we get to see that he might be a homosexual.
Yes, exactly. He has other interests.
I think he does. There's a lot of the subtext. While rewatching these macho 80s films, there's a lot of subtext there.
Yeah,
about,
which is interesting.
Is this man actually gay but having to pretend to be straight?
He's also got his back to her. You know, I wonder whether it's such a lame film that she's not wearing any clothes, whether she's wearing her underwear. But the implication is that she's hiding in a bush getting dry and she's completely naked. And he's got his back to her, toweling himself down with his shirt, his top off, for us all to look at.
It's such a weird tone reversal as well, because usually in these films you'd get the man going, I don't mean to look at you.
Yeah.
But she's doing that, and he's being uncomfortable at it.
But she's still wearing her pearls. She's got her string of pearls on, so at least decorum is kept.
Yeah. But he says, we should get going now.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's trying to dry the clothes off.
Yes.
So he's kind of like squeezing them out.
That's right.
And then when she starts ogling him, he goes, anyway, we better get going. I just thought, wouldn't you enjoy a woman ogling you?
Yes, or discuss what had just happened.
Yeah.
So, again, you sort of want her to go, ninjas? You know, that's odd, isn't it? Yeah. Philippines?
Yeah.
Were they ninjas,
it
Michael?
It does need a moment like that, by the way.
All of television history is contained in the Box of Delights.
I've climbed up Nelson's Column once before.
These are small.
And put it down in front of Bagpuss.
I'm Julia Rayside. Join me and my guests as we dip into our favourite TV memories.
Suppose Mother Thursday bashing her head like this.
You can't tell me what to do. You ain't my mother.
I love when a plan comes together.
Come and tell us what yours are too.
We've all been told we can't discuss nominations.
It's a bit of car air.
Shut up with a novel on the top.
I think I'm like you, Lovejoy.
Find us on Twitter at Box. Box Delights Pod and listen wherever you get your podcasts. Great Big Owl.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Smashbot.
And nobody at any point, and in fact, when they go back to the base, they sort of say, oh, lucky we got back. And then Ronaldo quite quickly reports to the colonel, doesn't he? Seems like they were attacked by ninjas. Mm. And the colonel just goes, okay. Mm. A perfectly natural thing to happen.
And then he drops her off at our house. They get a fruit van.
Yes.
Back to the base. He drops her off at the colonel's house.
Yes.
And then he goes back and he gets in trouble for it. And he gets threatened with a court-martial.
Well, I couldn't quite work out what the logic of this... I mean, they say what the logic is, but it doesn't make sense. The American army are on a convoy with the colonel's daughter, the most precious thing to him. They get attacked. No one fights back except for this one man. Everyone is killed apart from this one man.
And Ronaldo.
Oh, and Ronaldo.
Cristiano.
And he saves the daughter's life. And when he gets back, the colonel, the Patricia's dad, says... How could you do that? You're going to be court-martialed. And I don't know quite what the crime is.
No.
And it is for fighting back, isn't it?
Yeah, getting everybody killed.
He got everyone killed.
Being a hothead and getting everyone killed.
That's right.
Is the implication.
You know, God forbid.
He's been confined to base.
Yes. That's usual at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, and...
This is a good bit. He says, according to witnesses' testimony and evidence, this massacre was the work of ninjas. And again, no one comments beyond that.
Yeah, no, because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And then they go, I've got his file. Ronaldo says, I've got his file. His name is Joe Armstrong. Date of birth? Unknown.
Yeah.
Place of birth?
Unknown. It's very good. I quite liked that, actually, because he brought no sense of mystery, but at least his biography, his sort of background check, gave him a whiff of the stuff.
They could have just downloaded his Wikipedia page.
They could have done that. Would have been much quicker.
Although it might have been altered by people.
Yeah, that's
stupid,
right.
Hothead got all his friends killed. Yeah.
He's really pretty. Just don't ask him to speak.
Citation needed.
Yes, exactly.
Actor. Citation needed.
But do we not go off to the rebel base first before...
Ortega. Here's the bad news.
That's right.
And Mr. Ninja.
Mr. Ninja.
Tells him it was America Ninja.
There's the voice.
Sorry.
We knew it was coming. We should probably do a time check. It was kind of inevitable, wasn't it?
Sorry.
And again, there was nothing really that the American Ninja did that marked him out as a ninja.
Well, no, he said he had special skills.
Special skills. Like holding his breath. Speak squeaky high voice.
I think...
I'm the American Ninja!
I think it was running away.
Running away!
Well, he did some kicks and punches and
but
some pushes.
Slowly, so slowly...
He did, this is the thing. He ran away and then hid, and that makes you a ninja, apparently.
Oh, well.
Who knew?
Hey-ho. Mm. Okay.
But yeah, he says, and then they basically say, well, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on that one.
Yes, they say, whatever he is, we may need to get rid of him. But not now. Let's not do anything about it now.
No.
We've got people coming tomorrow.
Investors.
And again, we don't know who the people are or why they're coming or what the purpose of their arrival might be. portend. Just, these are definitely baddies with their own rival base on the other side of the island. People are visiting, maybe for lunch or dinner or afternoon tea. We need to get rid of the American Ninja. But in later time.
The best fact about Ortega, actually, is that he voiced the dog Clem in the cartoon Rover Dangerfield.
Really?
The cartoon of Rodney Dangerfield as a dog.
Hey, Big Mouth, who asked for a wake-up call?
He's man's best friend.
Fetch, boy, fetch!
You want it? You go get it.
He's Rover Dangerfield, the dog who gets no respect.
No respect at all.
That's a lot to unpack, isn't it?
Hey, you get no respect as a dog.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Not as a Frenchman.
No, he's not French, he's American.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary French accent, isn't it?
It's a weird decision, because if someone says to you, Robert, you are going to play a man called Vincent Ortega.
Yeah.
I'll do it as a Frenchman.
Yeah, the French Philippines, is that what he was responding to?
I suppose he is.
Did the French have the Philippines once back in the day?
I think they did. I've got a vague memory they did.
I thought it was Spanish. Because I have been on the Philippines Wikipedia page this morning trying to piece together what might have happened in this film. So maybe they were French.
Maybe. But it's a decision.
Well, he might have just gone... I mean, this is a spoiler. He is an arms dealer. But it is spoiling the suspense of wondering what on earth they're doing, these mattress smugglers. He's an arms dealer. So he might have gone, arms dealer, that's French.
He might have just said, look, I can do a French or I can do Indian. It always sounds Welsh.
Yeah, yeah. So and I'll he tried the French. Indian and they went, no, do it French, love.
Do it French, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Points for the love at the end.
But yes, you're right, Ronaldo eventually, when Ronaldo hooks up with the colonel, we discover that a construction crew found Michael Dudikoff on an island in the Pacific. Is the Philippines in the Pacific?
See, this is where the Japanese bits are poking out
of
the script,
aren't we? Well, the Japanese did invade the Philippines, according to the Philippines Wikipedia page. Okay. They were under Japanese rule, so having a loose Japanese man in the story is not impossible to imagine. But he was found on an island in the Pacific 6 years ago when he was knocked unconscious, this is Joe, by an explosion where they were blasting a road through the jungle.
Yeah.
Brought back to the United States with total amnesia.
Total.
Age 16 in a reform school for almost killing a man.
Mm.
Which is a good audition, I suppose, for the army.
Bored him to death.
Yes, and he was offered yes, exactly. Or his high-pitched voice made his ears bleed. He was given the choice of enlist in the American army, go to send to the Philippines, or go to jail. I mean, what are the chances that having been found on a Philippines island and sent back to America, got into trouble, and then enlisting in the American army, which has hundreds of bases all around the world, he gets sent straight back to the Philippines?
Well, it's convenient.
Well, maybe he asked for it. Maybe it's a bit like the Mormons. You get to choose where you get to go around the world. He went, can I go? I want to go back to the place. Well, he wouldn't know where to go back to. He's got an amnesia.
He has.
So it is just a coincidence.
In many ways, this is like the film The Jungle Book.
In which ways would that be?
Well, if you think, you know in The Jungle Book at the end when he goes to the village to live with the people?
Oh, yes.
Imagine if it was an explosion and then he lost his memory.
Ah.
And in many ways, Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi.
Is that panther that raised him.
Right, okay, yes. I think that's stretching it, possibly.
Possibly.
Because The Jungle Book is definitely a good story that keeps me engaged most of the way through and definitely a bit moving at the end. And this was none of those things.
You say that, and you'd be right. But anyway, he's unpopular with the rest of the men now, as I discussed earlier, because of his hot-headedness. Four bodies to impress a girl.
Yeah.
Which is... My biography title. Or it could be, it could be Simon Cowell's.
Yes, could be.
But Ortega, meanwhile, has met with his buyers he was talking about earlier. One of them looks like a porn producer.
Yes.
He's got a big, fluffy, grey beard.
Yes.
Looks very, he seems to be French.
Is he?
Or European?
I'm not questioning it. I mean, I'm not disputing it. I'm genuinely questioning it. I sort of tuned out.
Yeah.
Was tall and bearded. Mm-hmm. That's what I got from his performance.
He's the kind of man who you'd expect to turn up at Burt Reynolds' party.
Oh, God, yes. He absolutely is. He's also the kind of guy that when it all kicks off right at the end, just stands there by
his helicopter.
He says
to Dudikoff at the end, I hear you've got a giant cock. May I see it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But Shin, we find out that Ortega has got a secret gardener.
Yes, he does.
Which is not a euphemism.
Yes. And this is where the Japanese, Japanoiserie of the music kicks in, and you suddenly go to an ornamental lily pond about 10 feet away,
yep.
where Mr. Miyagi looks up from within the ornamental pond and just looks sort of wistfully at them all, and you're going, ah, I think you're a secret ninja, Mr. Miyagi.
He's a mute, you know. They found him wandering around in the jungle.
Is that what they say?
World War
II
is still on.
Oh, well, he's definitely found in the jungle thinking that World War II is still on. Although when he finds, again, slight spoilery, when he finds a young American boy, he doesn't kill him no. or ask him, is the war over? He says, I shall now raise you in the ways of the ninja.
He doesn't bayonet him and say, that's for Hiroshima.
No, no. It's ask questions first.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's, you know, put it to you this way. You'd put aside war for the love of a child.
Oh, yes.
Not like that.
He was quite a comely child, I thought.
Yeah.
Sort of nice blue-eyed, blonde-haired guy. He looks good with a bow and arrow later on.
He certainly did. Again, Mowgli.
Yes, Mowgli. You're absolutely right.
See?
This is the future life of Mowgli.
Yeah.
Right, I see what you mean.
This is Mowgli being put through Rambo.
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. Ninja training camp.
Exactly.
But yes, at this point, I think we might be we're jumping about a bit, but at this point, after Joe has got back and everyone's hating him for standing up for the American army and trying to save Patricia, he lies back on his bed and remembers his childhood being trained by Mr. Miyagi in a little flashback.
Yeah.
Which gives away everything, really. But then it doesn't give anything away because you don't care.
No, you don't care.
Because there's, you know, I'm not invested. I went, oh, right, so that's how that obvious tab slots into there.
But Ortega takes his Boogie Knight investors to look at his ninja fighting school.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
It's basically loads
right.
of fat blokes running up a wall.
But it's like Total Wipeout, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. Like Total Wipeout. And Beardy Porno Man goes, very impressive.
Yes, yes. And what's really good is that there are definitely some sort of potato-shaped ninjas in the black suits.
Yeah.
And there are other ones in yellow suits and other ones in red. They look like they're in different hazmat suits.
Yeah.
And they're about to do It's a Knockout. And they're just sort of, again, very lacklusterly sort of walking by each other or pushing. They sort of push each other and sort of trip over.
There's a giant picture of a skeleton.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I really
exactly.
enjoyed.
That's good. And there's an enormous drum for beating ceremonially at times when you should be fighting people.
I wanted that picture of a skeleton to be there just so you could go, ooh.
Yes, and this is where we learn that the Black Star Ninja, Mr. Ninja, Adamant Ninja, is, yeah. and I quote, the top-ranking ninja outside of Japan.
I want to know how that's decided.
That's what I wanted to know as well.
Is it like a little committee that come and watch him?
I think it's like a squash ladder. You work your way up and then, or you get knocked down, you know, depending on how the game of ninja went.
But, and then he, yes, because then he proves himself to the investors by murdering one of his own men.
I know, which is very wasteful of resources.
It's very wasteful.
I mean, how much does it cost to train a ninja? I found myself wondering.
I would like to know.
I mean, that the ninja that he kills... I don't know, it's a couple of weeks on youth training scheme, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's not that much money. But you do go, why kill him?
Yeah.
Also, you don't know who he is because he's got a mask over his face. Is that your mate Graham?
Yeah.
It could be your best friend.
It could be Graham. I hope he's called Graham.
Graham Ninja? Oh no, I've killed Graham Ninja. Oh.
We nearly finished that game we were playing.
I know, we were playing, yes, exactly. Ludo, I think they'd play. That's what they play.
Well, R.I.P. Graham, with the angles.
But
now.
Thinking back to the 14-year-old me, that ninja training camp, which is straight out of Enter the Dragon, in my head, Enter Dragon training camp, ninja training camp and American Ninja, same visceral energy, excitement,
so,
a bad memory.
Do you think absolutely, but do you think the filmmakers were like, we could put a bit of Enter the Dragon here.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Yeah.
But this is a patchwork film with lots of bits from other films in, really.
There's a big one coming up in a bit.
Is there?
Massive. Huge.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'll point it out
the suspense. Together. That's the first suspense I've had in this experience.
Yeah, well, I like to provide.
It's not when he puts a bucket on his head, is it?
No. That's exciting.
That is exciting.
You've ruined that for the listeners now. Everyone's going to think you've just inhaled acid.
Yeah.
So seeing someone put a bucket... Yes, there is, listeners.
There is.
So Jackson, at this point, this is the bit that confuses me.
Right, okay.
And
back at the base.
Explain why in a bit.
Yeah, okay.
But back at the base, Dudikoff, Armstrong, is working on an engine of a truck.
This is a great moment. Now, in Death in Paradise, we have this a lot, and you can look for it in loads of Story of the Week TV shows and films, which is known as... actors interacting with objects they don't understand.
Yeah.
And he's just got a spanner and he's just sort of rubbing it on the engine block.
I have to pick you up there
right.
because he does do a bit of business. He picks up a spray can and goes, as well.
But he looks so unsure.
He looks like he has no fucking clue.
It's so good. And it's, again, it's that thing where you go on the day, they went, well, what am I going to do? Well, you know, just do something with the engine. And he can't say, but wants to say, but I'm an actor. I have no actual practical skills or ability beyond standing and speaking in a slightly squeaky voice. Mm. So they go, oh, just use the spanner and the bit of WD-40. Because that's what you do with engines, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You move the spanner back and forth and goes...
I did really enjoy that. It's just those little moments where you go, they haven't thought this through at all.
No. But also, this comes into play later, which I'll pick up later. I've written it down.
Okay.
But Curtis comes up to him and says, hey, you.
Yep. I hear you're kind of a tough guy.
Tough guy. Getting all those guys killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think you... He basically says, I think you and I should have a fight.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey! So you're the new driver, huh? I hear you think yourself to be some kind of a tough guy. A karate boy. Hey, I'm talking to you, hero.
And they do. He flips him about six times in a row.
Yep. But slowly. And
slowly.
Sort of bag of grade four flipping.
Yeah, like it's been rehearsed six or seven times. Yeah.
Also, they move from the sort of parade ground area onto a little palm-potted area, sort of like a boxing ring with a nice little sort of green mat underneath and a convenient hose lying around. So they go into a little ornamental garden for their fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, although we did point out earlier, it's off season. It's not.
Right. Yes.
Army
so is off season.
But every time you see one of them, or particularly Jackson, because he's wearing a tight vest, he's more sweaty or less sweaty in each shot.
That's right.
Which is maybe, I'm thinking, what the hose was for, to cover that up. Yeah, but anyway. This scene feels like they've watched some of those crazy Jackie Chan films where they use bits lying around. Like the bit where basically what happens is he flips him about six times.
Yes.
And then when Jackson says, right, well, we're going to have a fight now.
Yeah, yeah.
Dudikoff puts a bucket on his head.
Yes.
After rinsing him with the bucket.
Yes.
And sits there and points at it.
As if to go, I am feeling the force. I am Luke Skywalker, not using all of my skills, and I can hear the disturbance in the midichlorians as you move for me, and I will still defeat you despite having a metal bucket on my head.
Yes, and he does.
He does, and there was a bit of me that quite liked that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to be sneery, but I thought that is what a ninja would do. An American, like a Japanese ninja might put something else on their head, like a teapot, turned upside down, sort of tea leaves dribbling down their face, but an American ninja, a big alloy bucket.
Well, this is the kind of scene that in one of those Japanese films, instead of an American ninja doing this, you'd have a wizened old man with a long beard, so you could chuckle and play with the beard.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So basically, you liked this, so did Curtis Jackson, because he says, hey, Curtis Jackson is man enough to admit when he's wrong.
Yes.
Hey, Joe's all right, everyone.
I know, it's all over.
Yeah.
So that...
And they all applaud him.
Yes, but it is a terrible fight, but if you imagined it had been a good fight, then it would have been earned.
Also, I like the way he talks about himself in the third person.
Oh, right, yes.
Curtis Jackson's man. Yeah,
that's always a sign of good mental health, isn't it? When you talk about yourself in the third person.
Oh, maybe this, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Joe Armstrong is his Tyler Durden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We do see them in the same shot. Yeah, they're yin and yang. One is black, one is white. You know, ebony and ivory.
Living together in perfect harmony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Side by side on my piano.
Right. One of them with
stroke
the
keyboard.
Yes.
I like the way he puts that in.
Exactly.
To say, in case anyone's pedantic. Yeah.
Well, it's sort of it's electricity arrived, you know, post-Dylan, we have electric.
Yeah.
And one of us with a bucket on our head.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I mean, if they had, I mean, they do, there is a version of this film where they do join forces, and they do sort of towards the end. But a buddy-buddy and sort of 48 Hours type movie would have been quite exciting at this point. Because Jackson has great karate skills. Yeah. He hasn't got the ninja skills.
No.
He can't put a bucket on his head.
No.
But he's got good karate skills. And he clearly does have good karate skills, unlike Michael Dudikoff, I think.
And he says to Dudikoff, in a minute, actually, because Dudikoff gets punished because Ronaldo comes out and says, you asshole.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that. I'm doing better acting than him. And he says, you're in trouble now. I saw what happened.
Yes.
And Jackson goes, hey, it wasn't him. It was me.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he pretends they were showing everybody, right, everybody, that's how you do a flip.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which I thought was totally plausible. Because the fight had been so lackluster, it did look like an exhibition fight.
It did.
Unlike the exhibition fight they'll do in about 10 minutes' time, which we don't see at all.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Ronaldo's got it in for
He's got
Michael.
Orders from above, hasn't he?
Hasn't he just?
Because we find out later this goes all the way to the top, Robert.
Yeah, yes, it does go to the top.
I say top, Robert, not the top Robert.
That's right.
Yeah. But so American Ninja gets put on bin duty.
Yes.
Where he's emptying bins. And Jackson comes up and goes, hey, you're really good. Me and you could quit the army and we could, like, do exhibition fights.
Fair point, I thought.
We'd make a fortune.
You know, because they're both... I mean, Jackson is a sergeant of some sort, but Armstrong is a private of some sort. They're earning next to nothing. They'd make a lot more money doing WWF back in America.
Yeah.
But Michael answers, doesn't he? Jackson answers, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. I don't like crowds and I don't need money.
Yeah.
And that's about the longest speech he does, almost the longest speech he does, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is a shame because you sort of think, why don't you? Because you don't like the army.
No.
Because they got you on bin duty. Why don't you go off and be an exhibition karate fighter?
Do something. You wasted your life.
Exactly. Although he also tells Jackson just straight up, I lost my memory a few years ago.
Yes. I got amnesia. My memory was wiped out.
Yeah, I know. And then that's just sort of left. Because Jackson goes, all right, fair enough.
Yeah.
It's a long story.
Okay.
I lost my memory a few years ago. My whole childhood is completely wiped out. I remember bits of things sometimes. Like dreams.
Well, we're now going to go to Patricia. Because Patricia has, despite the fact that she's crossed that her bow doesn't carry a comb when they go in a river, she... Despite also not having seen him since.
Despite him nearly trying to kill her.
Yes, knifing her in the groinal region.
Yeah.
Near the groinal region.
Yeah.
Decides, and she's once again in a car going to an unspecified destination being driven by Charlie.
Yeah.
Says, turn the car around. There's something I want to do. And you kind of know what it is. And then we get the display ninja fighting, but we come in after it's finished.
Yeah.
So in the the scene we've just seen is Patricia. It's a brief cutaway. But the scene before that was Jackson saying, no, I'll never do display ninja fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But the very next thing we see him do with we saw Armstrong say, I'll never do ninja fighting.
Yeah.
And now we see they've just done some display ninja fighting. He's not a man of his word.
And are now, like, best friends. Like,
yeah. But you would be, because I like Curtis so much, yeah.
Sweaty, tops off, arms around each other.
But I noticed that... Joe is in bare feet and Jackson's wearing socks.
Oh.
I think it's really sweet.
Again, it just points out how one is real and one isn't. This is Paul is dead all over again.
That's right. He's wearing socks.
I want a scene at the end of the film. I want someone to edit a scene at the end of the film, like in Fight Club, where you see all those scenes again.
Yeah. That would be good. Well, it would at least make you think for the first time.
It would, wouldn't it? It would make you stand up and go, oh, for fuck's sake. What a waste of time.
You go, maybe they weren't. And you go, oh, they were. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was not as interesting as all
that. Maybe that would explain his acting, because Jackson's imagination is so bad.
Yes.
That you can only imagine someone who can't talk very well.
Well, I keep forgetting his name because his acting is so bad. I never stuck a name to that face. We then start a new film, don't we, after this?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because Well, it is Top Gun, that is true, but it's sort of also, I thought, sort of the go-between, a bit of L.P. Hartley, or maybe Bennett's wooing of Harcourt in another country. Because this is now about, could you deliver a note for me, Charlie says.
Yes,
I've got a note, I'm meeting a girl, could you deliver a note, Jackson?
Jackson says, I can't, I'm on duty.
I know, and also, Charlie doesn't in any way set it up with Jackson. Jackson just knows in his bones.
Just knows.
So Charlie could go, but decides he won't deliver this note.
Well, Charlie can't go because he's got a hot date.
No, but he's got a hot date, but he can't go because he's got some duty.
Yeah.
Jackson says...
No, Charlie hasn't got a duty, he's got a hot date, but Jackson says, I can't go because I'm on duty.
Right.
And then Michael Dudikoff goes, I'll go. And they
Despite the fact that I'm confined to base.
You're confined to base. And he goes, oh, I'll get off base.
Yeah.
And then he says to Charlie, all right, well, you fill in for him doing that duty.
That's right. Which is sort of, again, you think it's setting up for a farce. It's gone a bit Ray Cooney. So suddenly Charlie, the driver, is now dressed in Jackson's clothes doing duties whilst Michael Dudikoff is confined to base.
Yes.
But he's now off on Steve James's motorbike.
Yeah, because they say, how are you going to get off base?
Yeah.
And luckily for him, there's a big
on
concrete
Tom Cruise's.
Ramp.
There is. It's just a ramp. I don't even think it's concrete. It's just a wooden ramp.
Did you notice that when he jumps over the wall and lands, the motorbike looks like it got totally fucked?
Yeah, it really does. It's a really heavy landing,
isn't it? Looks like it would just completely break.
And that's when the Chips music, the synthesizers come in. And off you go. I think I'm going to say something contentious, which is I quite enjoyed this little interlude. I was so bored by the kung fu and the ninja stuff. Not bored, but just so underwhelmed that here's a guy going to meet Charlie's date, not realising it was set up by Patricia all along as a way of getting him to go to the country club.
And what did the note say?
But it's like, got you, isn't it? And it's quite a sweet note from Charlie, who I suppose changed his opinion of Joe, even though Joe didn't try and stop him being thrown through a plate glass window.
Because Jackson has got such influence over this platoon.
If he says something's good, it's good. Do you know, that is true. Yeah. That is so true. You're absolutely right.
So they go on a romantic date.
They do. They go on a motorbike ride through a blossomy street. A sexy sax plays. Mm. And you're sort of going, oh, okay. It's like an 80s pop video. They go to a nice restaurant.
And who's at the restaurant?
Well, only bloody Ronaldo.
And?
Vincent Ortega or whatever his name is. Yeah. Yes.
And the baddie waves at him.
Yeah. Hello.
And then Joe's like, oh, I shouldn't be here. And she goes, oh, don't worry, Ronaldo's a pussycat.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Oh, and she says, oh, don't worry about him. He owns a big plantation on the other side of the island. Dad really likes him, which cues up. I wasn't paying enough attention to realise that that was what was being cued up. I just thought, oh, his dad really likes him. Fair enough. And Ronaldo says, well, I could arrest him for breaking, for leaving the base.
Yeah.
But the baddie goes, no, I want him dead.
I'm dead.
Yeah. And which seems fair enough.
Yeah. He says, no, I want him dead. Mm-hmm. And I know just how.
Yeah,
and
but
the plan,
say.
As it turns out, is get ninjas to try and attack him again.
Yeah, yeah, Mr. Yeah. Ninja. That is true. And again, this is where you sort of go, the geography of this island is odd, because they finish their dinner, go back to Patricia's house.
Yeah.
She invites him in.
He says no.
To start off with.
No, come on.
And he does go in.
Wouldn't the colonel see him?
I don't know, but he's a ninja. He's
wouldn't
very
he hear
quiet.
His squeaky orgasm?
Ooh. Oh, Patricia!
Right, a mouse in there.
And then he'd slip out through the window. I mean, that is the advantage of being a ninja.
Well, I thought...
You can come and go unseen.
Oh, yes, very good. The only trouble is, when he's finished, he leaves a puff of smoke.
desiccated spunk.
Oh, God. Never mind. I thought the thing, because Ronaldo comes in to the barracks in the morning.
Yes.
I thought the thing was going to be that Joe wasn't there.
Well, that I because seeing how he had to escape going up a ramp to get over these high walls, you go, well, we're going to have to learn how he gets back in. Because he's got a motorbike. Mm. He's confined to base. When he presents himself to the military police at the entrance, they'll go, well, what are you doing out? That's solitary confinement, mate. And why have you stolen that motorbike? He's just lying on his bed, almost as if the whole thing up to this point had been a dream.
Yeah. But Ronaldo says to him, you're in big trouble, Buster.
Yeah.
He says, you're going to the motor pool. And I thought, but he was in the motor pool yesterday.
It's sort of stranger than that, because this is one of those bits where you go as a screenwriter. So he says, you don't like the hard work, right? Mm. You'd rather be driving around town, right? Well, I'll have you driving, right? And you're thinking, yeah, driving you around the bend by cleaning latrines or going on a 40-mile walk. But he goes, report to the motor pool.
Yeah.
And you go, but he does like driving. You've just established he does like driving.
Yeah.
And you're sending him to a driving job. So he's done well, yes. So we're pleased with how he's done. You like driving. Do you want to do motor pool duty?
Should have a car run over his testicles.
Exactly.
That would be fitting.
Might make his voice a bit high. Ow! Oh, bloody hell!
But he's sent to pick up a truck and then is told to take it to the docks.
The port side warehouse.
Yeah.
Not the starboard side warehouse, because that would be stupid. The port side warehouse. And again, it's another lorry transporting we know not what, we know not why. And it turns out that it is very important, but it's sort of bolted on subsequently.
You'll never guess what happens, though. It's a ninja ambush.
It's a ninja ambush.
This is Ortega's plan.
That's right.
That he tried before.
He sets... So, this... We briefly talked about this before the podcast started. This, I've written down in my notes, as the warehouse debacle.
Yeah.
So, Joe has got this lorry transporting we know not what, taking it to Warehouse 5, the portside warehouse, and he goes into the warehouse and he discovers that there is a ninja or two up in the... Not by the door... Not with guns or swords that as soon as he walks in, they shoot him. But at some distance from him in the rafters is a ninja with a bow and arrow. No, with a spear first, isn't it?
Yeah.
He throws the spear very slowly and he sort of steps to the side and the spear misses. Then a couple of guys with bow and arrows shoot. He grabs those from the air or does he just step to one side?
I think he steps to one side.
And then the sort of Clive Dunn ninja climbs down a rope, really slowly.
Really slowly, yeah.
Very, very slowly indeed. Then we've got a ninja that jumps down again. They've just put themselves so far away, mm-hmm. and Joe knifes that ninja. Then there's another ninja. We're on ninja, as I have noted this, we're on ninja four now, who's standing on a bag of rice.
Yes.
And the rice begins to topple. Terrible ninja. Who gave me these bad ninjas? Mm. The rice begins to topple, so Joe puts his sword through the rice bag, spears that ninja. There's a fifth ninja up in the rafters again. He has no bow, no sword. He's got a throwing star. But he falls into a box which has a mattress in it. Because does Joe throw a knife at him?
Doesn't he pick up the throwing star that missed him?
Oh, right, and throw it back, which is canon, I suppose.
Yeah.
Then it becomes briefly Inspector Clouseau and Kato as we go into a room where we don't go into the room, but it's lit, and you can see shadows of three different ninjas who decided the best way to kill the American ninja coming in through the door was to hide in a separate room that was lit so that every time they moved by a window, their silhouette would be thrown onto the window. And then after a brief gap, they get thrown through the glass. That's another three down. We're up to about ninja 10 now. There's another one on the roof who throws down some kind of...
net.
No.
Oh.
That's in about 5 minutes' time.
Oh, right, okay.
First, we've got that boring chain that he grabs and then pulls that ninja down. We now get ninjas, 11, 12, 13 and 14, who are in the roof with the net. You're
right,
absolutely right. So they jump down, having waited all of this time. Joe's been crossing backwards and forwards across the floor of this warehouse all of this time. They jump down with the net and trap him, but he's got a sword, so he slices through that. And then the best moment, which is there's a bank of barrels behind Joe. And he puts his sword, for no apparent reason, a bit like he was playing The Price is Right or something, into one of the barrels, and out of it, like a jack-in-the-box, pops a ninja's head.
Right, yeah.
Because there was a ninja who thought the best way to kill the American ninja was, I'll get in this barrel, and I'll pull the lid down on top of my head, and I'll just wait. Mm. He'll never know amongst these 15 barrels that I'm in this barrel.
Yeah.
He's an American ninja, and so he slices him. We're now on to ninja 16, and he has a ball of string, and throws it at Joe, and it wraps around his wrist, but Joe then throws two swords, and then either kills ninjas number 16 and 17, or kills 16 and 15 got up again, and has been killed for a second time, because I think they haven't done due diligence on how many ninjas there are.
No, yeah.
But there are now 16 dead ninjas on the floor, all of whom agreed that they would take it one at a time before attacking Joe, not one of them with a gun, and Joe has killed them all, mostly by wiping his sword against their sort of waistcoats. And you're about 15 minutes further into the film, and you just want to go and have a lie down and a sleep.
But he gets, isn't it at that point, he gets on a motorbike?
He does get on a motorbike, but...
Because we now get the Raiders of the Lost Ark copy.
We do, but it's also, there's a strange, you feel that we're missing a bit, because there are two stooges outside, which we've not mentioned, because the warehouse sequence was so exciting.
Mm.
It's not even, as we know, the only warehouse sequence. We've got another one coming up. There are two stooges outside who were the first people to say, go into that warehouse, Joe, that's warehouse 5, and they've locked him into the warehouse. But before we get the Indiana Jones sequence, Joe just appears on the roof.
Yeah.
Climbed out of a window. I don't know. You feel that there's a bit missing.
There is.
And then he goes down, and you're absolutely right. And we've got a motorbike and sidecar. And this sequence, quite good.
Yeah.
I quite liked this.
Because he's got a man riding the motorbike. He gets in the sidecar and he starts punching the man while he's riding the motorbike.
Yep.
All the while, a truck's coming at him to hit
him. Yeah, yeah. His truck being driven by the other stooge.
Yeah.
I did find myself going, why doesn't he just go home?
Yeah.
What? So why is he trying to get the lorry back? You know, because he lost all of those lorries in that first convoy.
Mm.
He's not averse to losing a lorry, but here he's going, I'm going to risk my life one more time to get my... They've stolen my lorry, for heaven's sakes. I've got to get that lorry back.
But cut a long story short, he is thought to have been killed by the stooge, who runs over the motorbike not knowing that Joe has actually got on underneath the
truck.
That's
right, and is holding onto the axle, not spinning round and round and round and round.
That would be ridiculous.
Ludicrous. And I do remember, that's the only bit of the whole movie that I remembered from my childhood, the fact he can hold on to the underside of a lorry for at least 3 or 4 miles up to the rebel base.
He goes back to Ortega's house.
That's right.
And they put the truck in a shed.
That's
and they
right.
open what's in the back, and it's this most ridiculous tinfoil-looking bazooka I've ever
with
seen
a sort
life.
Of Asda shopping basket attached to the side.
Yeah. It looks like something my son would make to take to school
yes.
as a weapon.
That's right. And you'd go, no, love, look, I think Dad needs to help a bit.
Yeah.
This looks really bad.
This is a cardboard tube and you've put tinfoil on it.
Yeah.
And a wire.
Yeah.
Sellotaped a wire to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, ha, yes. ha, 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 yeah. But Joe, in the meanwhile, because he doesn't know what's in the truck, he sneaks out when they're all gone and goes and has a look. But there's one guard left in the shed.
There is, isn't there? Not very good ninja skills, Joe.
No.
That's
the guard
poor.
Sees him and he knocks him out, but the guard fires a shot.
Yes.
So Joe...
This is warehouse sequence two.
Yeah, that's right.
And dear God, it's boring.
He basically just climbs up to the rafters
well,
and
what
gets
he
out.
Learned from the last warehouse sequence is if you're in a ninja fight, get into the rafters.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in the building and someone's coming in, hide in the rafters. Mm. And then he very noisily runs around. Well, not that noisy. Some of it is noisy. Some of it is suspiciously quiet.
Yeah.
And again, climbs through a hole in the roof.
Mm.
But once he's through the roof, people see him, they shoot at him, and he just runs about a bit.
But he gets out, he runs into the woods, and then he bumps into Mr. Miyagi.
Mr. Miyagi.
He says something to him.
Yes.
Something like, ah, you are a nice boy. Run that way.
Yes. And Joe says, who are you?
Yeah.
And Mr. Miyagi says, you will know when the time is right.
Who are you?
You will know when the time is right. Our paths will meet again.
What do you mean?
Your karma and mine, they are connected. Go.
And you want to go, why doesn't Joe go, no, tell me now.
Yeah, a bit vague.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just what, no, my question still stands. Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You appear to be a Japanese hangover from the Second World War. Why have you just saved my life? And pointed out this secret tunnel that I suppose he does know rather than the rebels, you know. Sorry, that was a sigh of longueur. Just what it's like revisiting this for this long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great tragedy to say. It wouldn't have even been quicker if we'd watched it a second time.
No.
We're still quicker than watching it.
No.
But yes, Mr. Miyagi sends him on his way, and we sort of cut to him being back at the base.
And he gets arrested for stealing equipment.
That being the lorry, what's he stolen?
I think the lorry.
Is it?
I think they're trying
really
to frame him
about
for being behind all of these thefts.
That's right. And it's only now, about an hour into the film, where I start to realise that there are people at the American base who are selling weapons to the rebels so that when they complain, oh, we keep being stolen from, that's a fib. They're actually setting up the stealing. And the rebels are now selling it to the tall Burt Reynolds actor from Boogie Nights who's going to buy it for $4 million.
Yep.
So I now understand this is secret arms dealing.
Yeah, and Joe's been put in the jail, and Ortega says to Adamant Ninja, go there tonight and kill him.
That's right.
So he does go there, kills loads of guards.
That's right.
And again, Joe gets blamed for it.
Yes.
Whilst having a mini fight with Adamant.
Yeah, but also again, what's really strange, so Joe's in his cell and Mr. Ninja cuts the electrics to the building, climbs in, kills a few people, and Joe manages to escape and they start racing around the base. And I'm sort of going, why isn't Joe shouting, there's a ninja on the base?
Yeah.
Everyone, there's a ninja.
He tells Jackson. Maybe he knows that he can't trust
anybody. Yeah. But it's really strange. And then the fight that they have is silent. And you're going, you're an American soldier. He's a Japanese ninja warrior. I've heard the highest ranked ninja warrior outside of Japan. Why aren't you just calling for backup or the military police to come?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess he's mistrusted.
That way, well, yes, but there comes a point where you have to rely on the fact that they will, you know, be on your side a little bit against the ninja.
Yeah.
But you're right, the ninja escapes and he goes and talks to Jackson because he
says,
knows.
Bring me a jeep.
Yeah. But in half an hour, not now.
Not
in
now.
Half an hour.
Half an hour. Because he's wanted now.
Yeah.
Joe. So he brings a jeep, but he also brings Patricia.
Mm.
And he says, why is she here? And she says, we can go and tell my dad.
Yes.
He'll believe us.
Yeah.
So they go there, they tell him, and the colonel says, hey, no problem, you guys stay here, I'll call the military police.
Yeah.
But he's brought Ronaldo.
That's right. It turns out they're all in on it. Mm. Or at least certainly Ronaldo and the colonel are in on it.
Yeah. So they say to Joe, you're under arrest. And he jumps out of the window and leaps into a jeep. And my favourite bit is when a guard comes out to shoot at Joe, Jackson kicks the rifle out.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
And the guy turns to him and Jackson literally goes, sorry.
I know,
it's really British.
Good. It's really,
sorry
really
about
good.
That.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
I want him to get away.
But he drives off, and this is the bit I remember from the film more than anything else, is that Ronaldo chases him.
Yep, in a jeep.
And we've got some proper Garth Marenghi car driving.
It's literally
in a black room with air being blown.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And they have a minor car chase.
Yep.
Ronaldo drives very slowly.
Yes.
And it's like that bit in Top Secret where the two cars tap each other.
Yes, that's right.
And he bumps into a tree and it goes...
into the biggest explosion. It's like the end of the Death Star.
Yeah.
He just rolls down a very light slope, like it's on the edge of a croquet field.
Yeah.
And then touches a tree and then explodes.
Explodes.
Poor old Ronaldo.
Well, he deserved it.
I don't know. I think the Colonel is more culpable than
He's
Ronaldo.
He's in hell now with Tony Scott.
He is, yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right.
So then the Colonel says, Ortega comes to the Colonel's house.
Yeah.
And he says, look, this is too big now. I want to back out of this.
Yeah.
But as insurance,
yeah,
Adam Antninger has snuck in and stolen Patricia.
That's right. Who is packing or just poozling about?
But he horrifically chloroforms her and then stabs her in the neck with some sort of injection.
Yeah, some horrible, like,
he's
course
got, like, a
injection.
Multi-purpose ninja suit.
Well, as we're about
as we're
to
about
discover.
To find out.
Yeah.
So they basically, we have this big showdown at Ortega's house. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Joe gets there and Joe does the greatest move I've ever seen.
Right.
Where he stamps on a man's nuts to the extent where they put in a sound effect like...
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
it's brilliant.
Right.
It's like it he's grinding them into the dust.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that.
Well, I think probably because the guy had a very deep voice and it made Joe jealous.
I sound like you now. But this is my favourite bit, right? He runs into Ortega's base with the mission to...
rescue Patricia, you'd have thought.
And it's nighttime.
Yeah.
And he bumps into Mr. Miyagi and he says, do you want to come in for a cup of tea? And he goes, all right. And they go in and then they have this massive long chat.
Yeah, so I've written down here, Patricia is being raped. A lovely tea interlude.
Yes. And because, flashback.
Yes. But also, they spend the night together, Mr. Miyagi and Joe.
Yeah.
And he delivers... Subtext. Yes, he delivers the best line.
Yeah.
This is Joe. He goes, when Mr. Miyagi reveals, I am the master who found you when you were 6 years old. I trained you. Joe says, there's so much I remember, but there's also so much I don't remember.
Wow.
And you just go, that is profound.
It's like Oliver.
It is like
even the same voice.
He's got the locket.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Miyagi's got the other locket.
Where is ninja? But basically, he gives him his ninja costume and says, now you can wear this. These are all your ninja weapons.
Yeah, and they're good, those
weapons.
They are
good.
You go, couldn't you give them to him last time you met?
No.
Okay,
yeah. And Miyagi puts on his flares.
Yes.
Red flares.
Yes, I thought it was a skirt. Is it trousers? These are culottes at
they're
the very
big,
least.
Big trousers. MC Hammer.
Yeah.
And they have a final showdown. With Ortega's Boogie Nights men have come to buy the weapons.
That's right.
And they're like, here they are in this container.
Yeah.
And then Joe gets on top of the container and starts firing arrows into the ground.
Yes, doesn't aim at them, but he wants to warn them that he's standing on top of a big lorry.
But not a good move when all the men are holding machine guns.
That's right. And when they shoot at him, he just runs away.
Yeah.
This is this was quite a confused ending.
Made up on the spot.
Yeah, totally made up on the spot. And there's an element of Patricia being held hostage, and then that goes away a bit. There's an element of the American Ninja Joe having to give up his weapons.
Yeah.
But then magic, both capital M and sort of metaphorical, starts to happen. Because does Mr. Miyagi apparate?
He apparates.
Yeah.
And goes back to back with Joe with ninja masks.
That's right.
And they beat up everybody. And then at one point he teleports.
Yes, that's right.
So he disappears and then they're about to shoot Joe.
And he dissolves. It's like it's gone up in the Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah.
Dissolves out of the shot.
Yeah.
And then reappears just in time to take a knife.
Yeah.
Because Joe is an American ninja, dressed as an American ninja with all of the weapons, you'd have thought you've just plucked it out of the air or dodged it.
Yeah.
But Mr. Miyagi decides to put his body in between him and Joe and die heroically.
Yeah.
He lays down his life so that the American ninja can live.
So then the American ninja and Adam Ant basically decide the best way to have a fight is then to do the Krypton Factor.
That's so true.
Run up and down walls, climb up ropes.
Yeah. Well, they go to the training base, don't they?
Yeah.
And the Adam Ant decides that he's going to run through the climbing frame with the strange swinging objects on.
Yeah.
And Joe doesn't go, oh, I'll just run round that and wait for you at the other end.
No.
Joe goes, oh, I better run through the same thing.
Yeah.
And then when Adam Ant goes up one rope, Joe doesn't go, well, I better go up and follow him. He goes, well, I'll go up this other rope to the side because it's sort of more aesthetically pleasing if we both go up at a similar time. And it's at this point where Adam Ant, Mr. Ninja, uses the secret flamethrower power he has to burn the rope.
Yes. And he's also got a secret gun.
He has a secret gun and... in case you worry that it's getting a bit silly, he also has a secret laser finger.
That's right. I'd have led with that.
You think early Doors, back in the convoy, when Patricia, just after Charlie got his head thrown through the glass, do the laser then.
Yeah.
Just sweep the laser across your field of vision, cut everyone in half. They fall in half. You get whatever was in the lorries.
Absolutely. Also, disappointing that during this Krypton Factor fight, this picture of the skeleton didn't come to life.
Yes, exactly.
And fight them.
Yes, like the Stay Puft pastry. That's what you sort of want coming down on them. But to draw a veil over this ghastly
Joe kills him.
Joe kills him.
And then Patricia has to go in the helicopter with Ortega, who's now killed the investors and taken
the
money.
That's right. So he's got the money. He's got Patricia's insurance. He gets into the helicopter. Good stunt coming up.
Yeah.
Joe jumps onto the helicopter. I thought it was a good stunt.
But the helicopter's got a convenient brace all the way around.
He does, and drives at about 6'5" above the ground, so that it's good grabbing height.
But he grabs, and in the meantime, Jackson has got the bazooka that my son made at preschool.
That's right, with the Asda shopping basket attached to the side.
And when Joe leaps out of the helicopter with Patricia onto the roof, which the helicopter pilots happily let them get out on, they blow up the helicopter, and that is the end.
And that is the end. No, it's not. Because Joe has jumped out of the helicopter with Patricia. They've landed on the roof. The helicopter explodes. Then Joe throws Patricia down to the ground where Jackson catches her.
Yes, you're right.
And then we do a very slow zoom in on the American Ninja's face. And he just stands there. And he sort of looks like he's going, well, have I left the gas on?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I double locked the front door.
He's thinking... Ninjas?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how it ends. Yeah. And that's when it ends.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't challenging. Talking about it has made it worse.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, it's not been the therapy or catharsis I was hoping
for. No, it's just raised more questions, really, hasn't it?
Could we not be doing something other with our time?
Could go to the pub,
watch Top Gun. That's a good film with the motorbike sequence.
Coming soon.
So what's the rating of Top Gun on IMDb when I looked it up?
I don't know.
6.9.
Is it?
We live in terrible times.
69.
Nice. Exactly. But can you imagine one of the greatest action films ever made and people just think, oh, it's 6.9.
Right, we've reached the point where I'm going to ask you some very quick questions because we're getting kicked out in 10
that's
minutes.
Absolutely fine.
So, Robert.
Hi.
Who is the best, Arnie or Sly?
I don't care. I mean, truthfully, 1980s, Sly is better. 1990s, Arnie is better, I think.
What is the best action movie of all time, in your opinion?
Well, this caused me sleepless nights. Literally, I woke up in the middle of the night in a panic because I'd want to go to Die Hard Early Doors, but no, I don't think it is. After long consideration, there is only one correct answer. It is The Matrix.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I remember when I saw The Matrix, I came out and was so impressed by the bullet time, by the storytelling, by the manga, that I tried to run up a lamppost and fell over.
Oh.
1999, outside Swiss Cottage.
Is that an exclusive story?
That's an exclusive story. But I think The Matrix, for bang for its buck, because Die Hard is brilliant, as are so many of those Arnie and Sly films. True Lies, for example, apart from the appalling striptease scene, which means it's unwatchable now. Jamie Lee Curtis does a striptease to her husband who doesn't go, love, it's me.
I quite like that scene.
I think it's problematic.
Well, it is, but, not when it's supposed to play out that he goes, hey, it was me all along.
I know.
We're in love. We're having this saucy moment.
But he sort of gets crossed anyway, let's not go into...
Do it doucement.
Yeah.
Slowly.
I think it's problematic.
Okay. So terrorists take over a skyscraper. You can take three celebrities with you to stop them. Who are you taking up the Shard and why?
I'm taking up the Shard. I think the first person I'd want to have at my side would be the actor Tom Cruise, because I think he's been training for so long.
Yeah, for this.
And I think he'd think he was action Jackson Tom Cruise person, and he'd go, well, I can fly helicopters and I can do this and that. But we'd need somebody to tell him what to do. So I'd take Professor Heinz Wolf to... get all of the rubber bands and other like office furniture and stationery, and they'd get together. So you've got Heinz Wolf telling Tom Cruise, this is how you're going to bungee jump out of the window.
Yeah.
And then you'd need somebody, is it Harry Ellis in Die Hard? The snoozy, snoozy isn't a word, the sleazy guy, Timmy Mallett.
Oh.
I'd say you've got Tom Cruise and Heinz Wolf trying to get out of the window and bungee jump down, and you've got Whack-A-Day, Timmy Mallett, trying to distract the terrorists as they come in. I think I could just walk down the staircase and just go. I'd just walk out the building.
What if the terrorists have got a bomb ballerina?
Very good. Bravo.
You can go back in time and stop someone being born. Who is it? Like Desert Island Discs, I'm giving you Hitler.
Yeah, okay. So, again, this is tricky. So I read history at university. So I went through the sweep of all time that
Not
I knew
from... He didn't do anything.
I think of Matthew Crosby. Yes. So from 1066 onwards, so not Hitler, but in the last 1,000 years, sort of focusing on British history in a world where we've got sort of Farage and Tommy Robinson and people like that. And I'm going with my neighbour Martin, who's a cunt. So when we got an extension done, he tried to object with the local council. He then disputed the border between our two properties and then tried to slap a right-to-light order on us from a dodgy lawyer in Norfolk. So Martin, my neighbour, is the person I'd go back in time and make sure was never born.
Well, that answer's never being beaten.
No, no. His wife just left him and everyone in the street went, yeah, yeah. I mean, because you would. It's
what if
Martin.
What if he's a fan of this show?
Well, the problem we've got is that he's also built a shed in his garden that looks, when he's in it, straight through our window into our bedroom.
Oh, my God.
And he's not spree, he's lone wolf. So you have to be a bit careful that when he goes...
Yeah.
You know, when they go and the neighbours go, oh, he was such a quiet guy, I never thought it would happen. I've always got an eye on his window because I'm looking for a telescopic sight coming in from the neighbour. So, yeah, out of all of history... Martin, the neighbour from next door.
What you should do then as a present, as a peacemaking gesture, is buy him a laser sight. That way you'll know.
Then, because I'll have the dot on my forehead like Arnie in Cobra.
Yeah.
That was a bad film.
Sylvester Stallone in Cobra.
Oh, Sylvester Stallone. God, I'd put the wrong person in. Sorry,
you failed. I've
seen Top Gun.
All right. But Tom Cruise. I knew Tom Cruise was in it. A hypothetical fistfight takes place between Rocky Balboa and John Matrix, which is Arnie in Commando. Okay. Who wins?
I've never seen Commando.
You bark about Top Gun.
I know. I thought Commando was far-fetched.
I'd agree with you on that. If you had to make your own 80s action movie, what would it be about and who would be the lead and what would it be called?
Ah, right. So, thinking of Arnie and thinking of 80s, I think it would be the Grace Brothers department store.
Perfect.
And a predator creature arrives and slowly picks them off one by one.
Even the pussy.
Especially Mrs. Slocum. And what you'd get, because it's Are You Being Served, is they all were in the war, weren't they?
Mm.
So all of those men, some of them have been in Burma, have got terrible flashbacks and fall to pieces. I think Captain Peacock would go rogue with a knife and sort of get naked. And it would sort of be the origin story of John Inman playing... Oh, God, what's his name?
Mr. Humphreys. Yeah.
And because he wasn't in the war, because he's so much younger than all of the other men.
Yeah.
And then he would take... Everyone was picked off one by one, sort of eviscerated and just sort of hung over doors and over, you know, the men's accessories department by the predator creature. John Inman would survive the whole thing and he'd get out of the building just covered in soot and viscera and he'd just go, I'm free.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, and it's called... Band of Grace Brothers.
I like that a lot. Also, you've got the bit where the guy's making the jokes about my wife's got a big pussy.
Exactly.
You could do that with John Inman.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you, all of the bands. Such a big pussy.
Yeah. So it would be a remake of Predator set in the Grace Brothers department store of Are You Being Served?
Band of Grace Brothers.
Yeah.
Well, that there is spectacular answers. And Robert, thank you for enjoying American Ninja.
I didn't really.
No, neither did I. But it was nice.
But thank you. I've really enjoyed coming in. But it's a challenging film.
Yeah. We'll pick a better one next time.
Maybe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome to the Musical Podcast. I'm Kiri.
And I'm Jade.
And I'm Dave.
Dave's on keys. but we don't play that too much because otherwise we'll have to pay some people rights money.
Yeah. We do a live show where comedians come and sing their favourite musical theatre songs in front of a live audience. This podcast
is us bringing that person inside of a building.
Welcome to Just a Minute with Jade Adams.
I panicked.
Enjoy.